If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcast family, a growing community of music and cultural podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and of course, music. For more, visit osirispod.com. Before we get to today's show, just wanted to thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, leave a review, or share this episode with a friend. We've launched the Sound Podcast merch store featuring great designs, including our world-famous bear on tees, long-sleeve tees, hoodies, and much more in various sizes and colors. Check it out at thesoundmerch.com and support the Sound Podcast creators while looking awesome. The show starts now.
Thank you.
You've been listening to I Just Want to Feel Something from Sam Bush's 2016 record, Story Man. For the uninitiated, Sam Bush was a founding member of the band Newgrass Revival, and as the name of this 70s outfit would suggest, this mandolin player and his cohorts, including Bela Fleck, brought forth the progressive sounds of bluegrass that several of the newer bands are playing today. So it was quite a delight when a publicist sent me a streaming copy of Revival, the Sam Bush story. I knew many of the stories, but like most great documentaries, you always learn something new. The film has been out on Amazon Prime now for a couple of weeks, and I'd encourage you to watch it. But first, have a listen to our conversation with Sam. The conversation started when I asked Sam how this film came about.
Well, it started with meeting two filmmakers named Chris, with a K, Chris Wheeler and Wayne Franklin. And so Chris and Wayne, we made their acquaintance down in the Destin, Florida area, where friends of ours live. And one of our friends is a great musician. His name's Duke Bardwell. And so they had told us about this documentary they were making about Duke. And Duke's story is pretty interesting. His film is called Duke and the King. And the reason for that is when he was a young man, he played bass for Elvis. So Duke's got an interesting story, and he's a very interesting character. So they made a documentary about our friend Duke. And so now cut to the chase about, probably about 2013 maybe. They brought Duke and the King to the Nashville Film Festival, invited Lynn and I to the showing of it here at the Nashville Film Festival, and we really liked it. You know, of course, we loved Duke and loved his story, and then the way they told his story was very interesting to us, and when they showed Duke playing music, it was current. It was what he does now. We really liked that angle on it. Didn't realize that they had an agenda that they wanted to get Lynn and I to the theater to see that movie because they were interested in talking to me about, you know, me being the subject of one of their documentaries. So it all started with Chris and Wayne. And so, you know, and it still took a few discussions because, you know, you don't really know. And really, it wasn't until Lynn pointed out the other day, I hadn't really thought of it this way, that, you know, it was like it was their film. They told my story. So in that way, you know, we had to entrust them. You have to entrust a filmmaker with your story because I wouldn't begin to know how to tell it. And so it was it's Chris and Wayne's, them telling my story basically is the whole way it all came down. So, of course, within that are rounds of interviews with me and Lynn even ended up talking on camera, which is not her first thrill. She didn't. Anyway, so you know that and generous friends that gave their time to get on camera, and because whenever you see a 30-second snippet of someone talking on camera, how many hours did that take out of their day for that to happen? You know, and think of all the interviews and. So then another thing that we wanted to do was to show our band in a current way. So it's actually got, we're in there, shows us working on the most recent record. So in that way, we wanted that part of it too, that you could show us as we play now. How do we sound now? So really, it's been a long time in coming. It hit the film festival circuit. Independent Film Festival circuit in, 2015. And so here in Nashville, for instance, it won the Best Music Documentary, so that's really cool. And then, so it was well-received enough that gave us all encouragement that we knew to pursue the commercial release of it. Well, then came about a two-year stretch of basically just song licensing and, trying to see what all the film, could be included in that, and some songs were just too expensive to use for the filmmakers, but for the most part it stayed pretty much that way. So finally here we are to November 1, 2018. It sees the light of day on Amazon.
Amazing stuff. There's so much to unpack. I do want to mention, just before I forget, though, that Lynn being on film did give her the chance to give you the gears about not putting out a record for a while. So so she should take that session with a grain of salt and realize she was able to squeeze one out there for you and give you a hard time.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I think she said something to the effect of, I wish I could get him to do, you know.
Right.
Nobody can make him do anything. I wish I could just say he can make a new record. But I'm about to do that anyway. So
that's
yeah.
Great. And we'll get to that in a bit. But I want to unpack a few things and don't get the opportunity to talk to somebody of your ilk very often. And the first thing, you know, I want to ask you about is, how do you feel about being credited as the inventor of this side genre of bluegrass, this newgrass thing, this slamgrass thing, this, you know, so many different names for it. But
yeah, right.
Well, let's call it newgrass because it was the newgrass revival, and that makes some sense. So, I mean, how do you feel about being credited as one of the inventors of newgrass?
I feel okay about being called one of that, because that's the most accurate. And you know, I mean, just in calling the band Newgrass Revival, I mean, we tried to sort of, that name to us sort of meant that we were kind of reviving an already new form of bluegrass that people like the Osborne Brothers and Jim and Jesse, the Country Gentlemen, the Dillards, you know, they had John Hartford, even the way he was making his records, that they'd all, you know, they had already departed from the old kind of bluegrass, from the traditional side of bluegrass. And so really in that way, we thought, you know, our slant on it was to kind of take, you know, maybe rock songs, and we liked rock and roll, and we liked trying to put them with our bluegrass instruments, put rock songs. So really, that was kind of our contribution at first, and maybe, so in that way, we were thinking that, you know, we were kind of reviving a style that our heroes got started in the 60s. And so, you know, to be called one of the people that helped start that music, well, then I'm okay with that. I'm surely not the only one. And I mean, when we went, when I was still a senior in high school and I got to go to the Union Grove fiddle contest, I walked over the hill and I heard some guys playing No Expectation by the Stones on bluegrass instruments. And it was a group of musicians that I would come to know and love called the New Deal String Band from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So they were the first hippie bluegrass guys I met, right? And I went, oh. But I liked, you know, same thing. They were branching out and playing different songs and stuff. And so I wanted to do that too. And then, of course, you know, playing about the Dillards who are putting strings on their records and what have you. So us, the Newgrass Revival, we were certainly one of the bands that pushed this newer bluegrass along. Tony Trischka was up in Northeastern Bengal Breakfast Special. They were a great group. Before that, Tony and Peter Wernick were in a group that made records for Rounder called Country Cooking. Well, back when I was still in high school, they were making these progressive-sounding records. So, right. You know, the Newgrass Boys, we're in there somewhere. And, I mean, the Kentucky State Legislature, yes, they called me on the Senate floor and declared me the father of Newgrass. And again, you know, nothing I've ever really called myself, but
right.
You know, I'll wear it.
Which leads me to a question that I don't want you to get in trouble for, but why are bluegrass traditionalists so uptight about the innovation of their music?
I wish I had a good answer for that, because I think it's always been a little odd to me, in fact, that when Bill Monroe started bluegrass music, what in the world did that sound like when he hit the stage of the Grand Ole Opry in 1946? I mean, it was hillbilly jazz. It wasn't at all like the string bands of the day played. Nobody played like that. And you had Earl Scruggs and Lester Flatt and Benny Martin and Bill and playing the way they played. So, you know, in that way, I mean, it's, you know, I know that, you know, we could rankle certain. I don't know what it is that certain people would want the music to stay just like it was in 1946, mm-hmm. because, you know, whenever I hear me or my friends, if we ever try to copy that music made in 1946, I don't think we're playing it better.
Right,
I think that was done then. They did it. They made that classic sound. You know, it's funny. It's like when I first started going to bluegrass festivals, and it seemed like we were all part of a little club that we didn't want anybody else to be in. Well, that's all changed, and it's only great that, you know, the bluegrass music has grown so much, and IBMA, and so it always boggles my mind a little bit if people are resistant to a change in music, but, you know, I too love the old time bluegrass. I love it all. You know?
Yeah.
I want to hear it that way too. If I want to hear the Osborne Brothers, if I want to hear Rocky Top, I want to hear it by the Osborne Brothers. If I hear Foggy Mountain Breakdown, I want to hear it by Earl Scruggs.
Right.
Mule Skinner Blues, I want to hear Bill Monroe.
It's not like you're not part of that community, and it's not like, you know, there's that story of, and I hope you'll retell it, of you hanging out with Doc Watson and leading him around a festival. There it's not like you're not, you know, friendly or pay tribute to the originators. It's just that you've taken it, you and your colleagues have taken it to the next level, right?
Yeah. Well, we were all, I mean, they're all the, you know, people, I can't put Doc in with the rest of, Doc wasn't a traditionalist. He was a guy that played a Les Paul that all of a sudden got more popular for playing a flat top guitar. he loved to play electric guitar, especially in the square dances where you could hear him.
Right.
You know, it's, I got a little sidetracked there, I guess, thinking about Doc, but, lead me back in. Where were we?
Well, we were just saying that you hung out with these people, and
now,
you're part of the scene, and you still play traditional bluegrass music at times. It's not like you're just, you know, not paying homage to the to the originators, and yet there's still this, I don't know, this hate on.
Well,
and it's not just you. It's newer musicians too that play bluegrass or new grass.
We always got along with all the pickers. We always got along with the musicians. I mean, everybody, the New Grass Revival, all of us, you know, Mac Wiseman was always great to us, the Country Gentleman. And they were kind of the newer guard, really, at the time, even at that. But, the, you know, the Gentleman and Mac and Ralph Stanley was kind to us. I mean, you know, I think that the division was really more in the audience's point of view and the type of festivals that we played, because some of the more traditional style festivals that were, you know, Bill Monroe promoted, well, they didn't hire us. We tended to play on the progressive ones, where, for instance, Carlton Haney would promote the progressive bluegrass festival, bluegrass, newgrass. He even called it a festival, Newgrass Festival, once in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And so, but we always got along with the pickers. That was never a problem, because really, I mean, and I always said, you know, okay, if there is such a form of music as Newgrass, well, in order to play that well, you first have to know how to play bluegrass music well.
Right.
You have to understand bluegrass and how that works and how the ensemble works and just the whole feeling of it. So really, if anybody that just wants to start out playing Newgrass, I suggest you get some, you learn some bluegrass standards first.
It's more than just improvisation that sets you apart, but at the heart of it, it's not just that you play harder or louder, it's the jams. I mean, pushing the boundaries, pushing the envelope in terms of the length of songs and what you do, that's all different. I mean, that is what sets you apart from the traditional bluegrass sound, right?
Yeah, yes, it is. And that, you know, once you start writing your own tunes, different subject matter, maybe different voicings. But the long jams, I mean, yeah, that just came. And again, that, you know, that had been done obviously in other forms of music, certainly in jazz and rock and roll had, you know, turned to jamming.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we were just kind of taking that thought and bringing it over to bluegrass instruments. Certainly nothing new in the world of music. It just might have been, you know, and for these instruments,
right,
this direction of music. But when we first started our band, Newgrass Revival, our bass player Ebo started hitting this little riff, and you know, later on we realized, what's the bass lick out of Jolene by Dolly Parton? But we started playing, you know, just improvising around this, and I believe it was our banjo player Courtney, and all of a sudden just busted into Lonesome Fiddle Blues by Vassar Clements.
Right.
And all of a sudden, boom, we had us a little tune. We'd jam a while, then we'd play the fiddle tune, then we'd, you know, do it again. Now, it's funny, before Vela Fleck joined Newgrass Revival, he said, yeah, people used to say about you guys, well, when they start a tune, you can go to lunch and come back and they'll still be playing it.
Yeah. Well, he's one to talk now, right? I mean, he's...
Well, he's gone a long way, hasn't he?
It's curious that you mention other forms, and I'm curious about how much you were aware of, you know, the Grateful Dead or the Allman Brothers or the other bands, not necessarily in the country music scene, but outside of the scene, that were pushing those boundaries in a similar way to the way the Newgrass was.
Really aware of it. Really aware. I saw the Grateful Dead before anybody I know. I just couldn't hear them. We defected from coming home from the Weezer Idaho Fiddle Contest in the summer of '67 and dropped through San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And I got to see the hippies, you know.
Right.
I realized I loved it. I liked that world. I liked the freedom. I liked the music. And way down the street, you could see a small figure of a band playing. And I, you know, you couldn't even get close enough to hear them. And I asked somebody, "Who's that?" He said, "Well, that's the Dead, man." And I actually already had a Grateful Dead record at home. So back in Bowling Green, I was checking out the San Francisco bands and loving all that. But
right.
And same way, you know, listening to Jefferson Airplane live record, they're stretching out, and of course I was a fan of the Cream, and anybody that played in a high school rock band in the '60s did in and got a DeVito. Well, there's 20 minutes.
Right.
So you get, you know, I was doing that stuff in rock bands, and so yes, we were influenced to just to kind of make these little jams and just try it out, you know, I mean, I remember hearing the best of Atlantic jazz when I was still in high school, and hearing John Coltrane play
right.
my favorite things, probably the simplest song he ever recorded. Well, he did a solo in there that one spoke to me. I got it.
Right.
I could understand it. And so probably the simplest song he ever recorded helped turn a hillbilly in Kentucky onto a more jazzy thing.
Do you think the Newgrass Revival would have had a better shot at achieving monetary success today or just after you guys broke up than you really ever had a chance? And I know there's a comment from Bela around, you know, making money, and that first record that you put out with the awful country tune.
What awful country tune?
I think we all know the one I'm talking about. I just can't remember. But there's a scene in the film where you're where they present you with a song, and then the A&R guys realize that they would never speak to you again.
We had a pretty tough relationship with Capitol Records because they respected our producer Garth Fundis, and we wouldn't let him hear our records till we were done mixing.
Yeah,
and that's not how that isn't how the major label business works now.
Right. But in terms of doing it on your own, maybe you would have had a better chance and using some of the examples of some of the other Newgrass bands that are doing it, or even the likes of Fish or the Grateful Dead model. I mean, maybe you would have had a better shot today than you did in the late 80s, early 90s?
I don't think we'd have had a better shot in the world of country music.
No.
It's hard to know. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think maybe Jerry in the movie says, I think they should have been in a rock or something.
Right.
And we spent 2 years, this is Leon Russell's band, and that didn't put us in the rock world.
Right.
It's just really hard to say how you might be sold and stuff. And who's to know, you know? We might have... we were at the peak of our popularity, and it was just time for us to stop. Bela wrote so many tunes that, you know, it was only natural that he goes in an ensemble where you can play all his tunes, because really we were a vocal band.
Right.
And so when Lynn and I went to hear the show by Bela and three friends that would become the Flecktones, and when I heard him in that show, I knew he had found his direction, and I couldn't even be sad. I was happy for him because I knew he was going to do it, you know. And John and I discussed whether or not to go on with Revival. And at that point, he and I had been in 15 years, and we both needed a break.
Right.
And, so really, that was just kind of what happened. John and I were just burnt out, and Bela was going to go on, and we just needed a break. And that break's been a really long one now.
Well, there's always a chance to get you all in a room together. I'm curious, though, about what comes next. And, you know, being a part of the Nash Ramblers with Emmylou Harris, or being introduced on some of the Bela Fleck and Flecktone dates as like a side man, come see the freak, Sam Boy. But did you feel out of place? Like, was it weird for you not to sort of be the front guy anymore and be right up front in the next sort of incarnation of your career?
No, it was great. Playing with Emmy for 5 years was just like job light, all the joy and less responsibility.
Right.
It was because, I mean, really one of my thing in by the end of the Revival was that I just needed a break from responsibility, just the responsible partner that, mm-hmm. by definition of our partnership agreement, I'm the managing partner.
Right.
And I just needed a break. And I didn't have a plan. And good old Emmylou called up with an idea of putting together an acoustic band that she could sing over not so loud. And the only plan I had after stress was to hopefully stop traveling. That's all I'd ever done as an adult. And that didn't happen because Emmylou called and it sounded interesting. And then I ended up meeting other musicians that I learned to love, Al Perkins. And I was a longtime fan of Al's, playing on many records that I owned. And John Randall Stewart and I became the best of pals. He's a guitar player. Larry, the drummer, I knew from, you know, I was a fan of his when he was the drummer of C-Train. So I recommended Larry for the job. And but it was 5 years of a joyful noise with Emmy. It really was. Because I needed the break, and it helped me learn to love music again. And by that, I mean, I just, you know, I wasn't concerned with business. I was only concerned with music and the notes. And
right.
It was a joyful time. And then, so after 5 years of being in, you know, what I would call an acoustic country band, then Bela called up with the idea of augmenting the Flecktones trio that had been going around as a trio then for a year. He wanted to just bring an extra person when they were repeating towns they'd been in.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So I did 86 shows with the Flecktones in that
wow.
year. It was great. So that, you know, got me the idea of improvising back in my head again, and
right.
how much I'm missing the improvisation part. No, I didn't miss being the guy that talked over the mic at all. I just missed a certain music. But really, so then after singing with Emmy and improvising with Bela, I was ready to put them both back in a group, but to get the started making my own records again.
What do you think of the new grass revival, pun intended, that is going on right now? You know, that started with the new, well, started, you know, as you admit, with Country Gentlemen and Jim and Jesse and those guys, and then certainly you bringing it to a four, but bands like Green Sky Bluegrass and the Dusters and Yonder Mountain String Band, I mean, the list goes on and on of the headliners, and then there's hundreds of other bands now popping up all over the place. What do you make of what's going on in the scene right now?
Well, many of those, excuse me, I guess all those bands you mentioned were youngsters in the audience listening to the Revival.
Right.
And but that's the good part. We're seeing, you know, these bands have their own voices. And in other words, you know, there's the String Dusters have I mean, they're one of the best playing bands of all of them. And but the way Green Sky certainly has their own sound, Leftover Salmon, you might look at it, Leftover Salmon has influenced some of these guys.
Right.
And I think Salmon was even around long enough to have influenced Yonder Mountain and those groups. So the good part is you've got good young bands with bluegrass style instruments making their own music, writing their own tunes. And I mean, right now, for instance, people might not think of them as a young group, but the Traveling McCurries, for instance, are when not playing with the Del McCurry band, they don't sound like the Del McCurry band. So
right.
they're making their own music now, and of course, the McCurry boys are all great players, and then you have a youngster like Sierra Hull who is just burning up the mandolin and really making great new music. And I think it's in really good hands because you've got some, you know, young bands that are still sticking by tradition and they like that, which you know, I'm happy about because I want to see traditional music survive too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a real healthy time when you've still got Mack Wiseman singing and you've got all these young bands playing. It's a pretty healthy time. There's some great music being done.
Your last record was 2016. Are we going to see a new record anytime soon? I know that you mentioned off the top that you're working on something.
I'll be booking. I'd probably be recording by February.
Right.
With the band. But one thing we're going to do is December 4, we're going to go in the studio, the Sandbush Band, and play. We have an electric side to the band, too, so
right.
We're going to go in the studio and cut this electric song that Jeff Black and I wrote, and I guess we can be watching for it on, like, YouTube video, if that's what ends up happening. But basically, I just want to cut this song. I just think it needs to be said, and there's not many times where I've ever felt like I want to cut this song because people need to hear this.
Right.
It's a song Jeff Black and I wrote about 10 years ago, and it's really, unfortunately, maybe more relevant than it was even when we wrote it. And Jeff and I were just discussing that we were sick of a violent society. Violence
right.
is just... And I actually heard a phrase the other day, it was Thursday, I heard a phrase on the news that said, this is the worst mass shooting in 12 days. In 12 days?
Yeah.
And I say it to the audience, and, you know, anyway, it just says stop the violence. And it's about, you know, the way Jeff and I write it, the obvious isn't always stated, but this time it is. So we're going to cut this rock stomp. It's a rock instrumental, and
cool.
Hopefully, maybe that'll come out like January. But I'm, cool. but then we'll get the whole band back in the studio again with our acoustic instruments, probably in February. So if we can get this thing out, because I have an idea of what to do, and I'm ready.
Cool. We'll switch just a little bit. We'll switch subjects just a little bit. National League Central has become pretty tight in recent years with the Cubs resurgence and the Brewers playing so well. What's going to happen with your Cards?
Well, let's see. Only the St. Louis Cardinals could have what they call a mediocre year and miss the playoffs by 3 games.
Fair.
It's going to go just fine. Hey, the Cardinals are just like the Cubs. Maybe the Brewer even. It's just like everybody else. They all need another starter.
Right.
Cards have the offense. I like their new manager. I like the way they play. I really like, what's the little fella's name? His curly hair, center fielder. Great young. He's just a real hustler. He's a great, he hustles.
Yeah.
But I like the way they've got him hustling. Central's going to be strong. I mean, again, is going to be very strong. The Cubs, to me, the Cubs were 2 starters short.
Right.
So were the Cardinals after Wainwright.
Wainwright went down, yeah. Can we count on you for a 2020 presidential bid?
You know, if it just wasn't so sick, I'd joke about it.
We need you now more than ever, probably.
I feel like Ross Perot. That's just sad, you know. It's just terrible in America. Our country's gone. My taxes are higher than Sam Bush in the 70s. I mean, this is terrible. You know, you can count on me to vote in 2020.
Okay, fair enough.
You count on me for that.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I've kept you probably a little longer than I should have.
Oh, no, we're doing fine.
Thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for the music and for continuing to, you know, stay the course and do it your way. And we appreciate that and can't wait to hear more great things. Continued success, okay?
Well, by golly, I appreciate it. And thanks so much. We'll be talking soon, I hope.
A true legend and a gentleman as well. There was plenty more to ask him, and I suspect Sam will be back on the show soon with details of a new record. What struck me while watching Revival, the Sam Bush story, was how genuine people were about his talents and indeed his place in music history. While Sam is quite humble about his role in shaping an entire subgenre, make no mistake, if it weren't for Sam Bush and the Newgrass Revival, we would likely wouldn't have Green Sky Bluegrass or the infamous String Dusters or Yonder Mountain String Band, and the list goes on and on. So thanks, Sam, for your contributions and setting a path for great music that has followed. For more on Sam Bush, visit sambush.com. Catch Revival, the Sam Bush Story, on Amazon. Before we leave you, have a listen to Everything Is Possible, also from Sam Bush's 2016 record, Story Man.
Everything.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.